जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन बालव गिरि मनोदारी यशोरनंदन व्रज जनरंजन यशोरनंदन व्रज जनरंजन यमुना तेरा बनचारी यमुना तेरा बनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन बालव गिरि मनोदारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन बालव गिरि मनोदारी यशोरनंदन व्रज जनरंजन यशोरनंदन व्रज जनरंजन जमुना तेरा बंचारी जमुना तेरा बनचारी जय प्रभुपदा जय प्रभुपदा जय प्रभुपदा जय गिरि गोवर्धन जय गिरि गोवर्धन जय गिरि गोवर्धन जय गिरि गोवर्धन
जय नित्य लीला प्रविष्ट अष्ट तरसत सी सी मनुष्य डिवाइन ग्रेस ए सी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत श्री गौर भक्तिवृंद की जय श्री श्री राधा श्याम सुंदर गोपा गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंद राधा कुंद की गोवर्धन की जय ग्रंथ राज श्रीमद भगवतम की जय श्री ईश्वर पुरी की जय गौर प्रेमानंदी ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज All glories to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 21, text number 45, 46, and 47. I'll chant verse 45 and 46, and then we can responsibly chant verse 47. Pravishya tattiram varam ari raja sahatmaja Tadarshamunim asinam tasmin huta hutasanam vidyatmananam vapusa tapyasugra yujam chiram tatikshanam bhagavata snigdhapangavalokanat tad vidyat mitya kala pihusha shravananam cha purusham pramsham padma palakshanam jatilam chira vatsalam upasam mitya malinam yata harnam asamskritam pramshum padma palaksham jatilam chiravasanam upasham mityamalinam yato hanam asamskritam prasum padma palakshasham jatilam chiravasasam upasham smityamalinam yato hana asamskritam pramsum padma palakshaksham jatilam chiravasanam upashim smityamalinam yator hanama samskritam. Verse 47, please chant. Pravishya, entering, tat, that, tirthavaram, best of sacred places, Ariraja, the first monarch, Svayambhuvamanu, Saha Atmaja, along with his daughter, the Darsha, saw, Munim, the sage, asinam, sitting, tasmin, in the hermitage, huta, being offered oblations, huta asanam, the sacred fire, vidyotamanam, shining brightly, vapusa, by his body, tapasi, in penance, ugra, terribly, yuga, engaged in yoga, chiram, for a long time, na, not, atikshamam, very emaciated, bhagavata, of the Lord, snigdha, affectionate, apanga, sidelong, avalokata, avalokanat, from the glance, tat, of him, vyahrita, from the words, amritakala, moonlight, piyusha, the nectar, Shavanena, by hearing. Cha, and. Pramsum, tall. Padma, lotus flower. Palasa, petal. Aksham, eyes. Jatilam, matted locks. Chiram vasasam, having rags for clothes. Upasham smritya, having approached. Malinam, soiled. Yata, like. Arhanam, gem. Asamskritam, unpolished. Translation. Entering that most sacred spot with his daughter and going near the sage, the first monarch, Svayambhuva Manu, saw the sage sitting in his hermitage, having just propitiated the sacred fire by pouring oblations into it. His body shone most brilliantly, though he was engaged in austere penance for a long time. He was not emaciated, for the Lord had cast his affectionate sidelong glance upon him, and he had also heard the nectar flowing from the moon-like words of the Lord. The sage was tall, his eyes were large like the petals of a lotus, and he had matted locks on his head. He was clad in rags. Svayambhuva Manu approached and saw him to be somewhat soiled, like an unpolished gem. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Here are some descriptions of a brahmachari yogi. In the morning, the first duty of a brahmachari seeking spiritual elevation is huta huta asam, to offer sacrificial oblations to the Supreme Lord. Those engaged in brahmacharya cannot sleep until 7 or 9 in the morning. They must rise early in the morning, at least 1.5 hours before the sun rises, and offer oblations. Or in this age, they must chant the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna. As referred to by Lord Chaitanya, kalo nasteva, 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 gatir anyata. There is no other alternative. There is no other alternative. There is no other alternative in this age to chanting the holy name of the Lord. The brahmachari must rise early in the morning and after placing himself should chant the holy name of the Lord. From the very features of the sage, it appeared he had undergone great austerities. That is the sign of one observant brahmacharya, the vow of celibacy. If one lives otherwise, it will be manifest in the lust visible in the face and body. The word vidyatamanam indicates that the brahmachari feature showed in his body. That is the certificate that one has undergone great austerity in yoga. A drunkard or smoker or sexmonger can never be eligible to practice yoga. Generally, yogis look very skinny because of their not being comfortably situated. But Kardama Muni was not emaciated, for he had seen the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. Here the word Snigdha Pango Valatkanat means that he was fortunate enough to see the Supreme Lord face to face. He looked healthy because he had directly received the nectarian sound vibrations from the lotus lips of the Personality of Godhead. Similarly, one who hears the transcendental sound vibration of the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, also improves in health. We have actually seen that many brahmacharis and grihasthas connected with the International Society for Krishna Consciousness have improved in health, and a luster has come to their faces. It is essential that a brahmachari engaged in spiritual advancement look very healthy and lustrous. The comparison of the sage to an unpolished gem is very appropriate. Even if a gem just taken from a mine looks unpolished, the luster of the gem cannot be stopped. Similarly, although Kadamba was not properly dressed, and his body was not properly cleansed, his overall appearance was gem-like. Om agyana tamaram dasya jananjana shalakaya chaksuhun malitam yena tasmai sri guruve namaha mukam karoti vachalam pandundam jayati girim yakripa tamaham bande shri gurum dinitarino vanchakopatiribhischa kripa sindhu bahebacha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha jayasi krishna chaitanya prabhu nitananda shri advaita gadadhar shri vasudhi shri gaura bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, the great fortune and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. I offer my respectful obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. By your recitation, one attains transcendental bliss because your syllables shower pure love of God. You are to be served by everyone, always, for you are an incarnation of Lord Krishna. I offer my obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the invincible Lord Sri Krishna. Simply by meditating on his lotus feet, I have been able to study and appreciate this great literature, Srimad Bhagavatam. This section here is describing, in one hand, very austere, restrictive type of lifestyle, and on the other hand, the great glories that come with that. Not overshadowed at all is the place where this activity is being performed. This is this holy place, the Bindu Sarovara. In verse 38 and 39, the description is given very detailedly about what a wonderful place this is, how it's connected to the pastimes of the Lord, the tears falling from the eyes of the Lord as he's overwhelmed with compassion. The beauty of this place is in the next few verses after that, the different types of trees, the different types of fruits and flowers. And it does mention in season that this not only is beneficial for the sages as they try to live a simple life and simply acquire whatever is there easily, but it's also very much appreciated by the different types of pious birds and animals and, you know, creatures like that. And the sound of these different birds, I've taken to putting a few bird feeders out in the backyard, and when I'm in the kitchen preparing the deity's boga in the morning, can sometimes hear the birds chirping. You know, it's not quite as wonderful as this, particularly as the as it says, the intoxicated peacocks and the intoxicated bees. So we're not against intoxication. If you're a bee or a peacock, you can have at it. And then it continues on describing all the different types, the previous verses, the different types of birds, the different types of flowers, the different types of trees. So we get very clearly the idea that this is a very, very perfect place for executing austerities. Now, sometimes we may find ourselves in a situation where it's an austere circumstance to be in. But here, the austerity is coupled and surrounded by great beauty, which is very comforting, so that one can easily execute those austerities. There is a very deep desire within the living entity to be comfortably situated. But when we artificially try to do that by so many different means of, you know, technology and this and that and the other and whatever, you know, it becomes a distraction. But when all of that is the natural beauty of such a holy place as described here, then one can very peacefully execute the devotional practices. Prabhupada starts off this purport here addressing the brahmachari yogi. And he mentions how the sage is arriving and witnessing that this Kadama Muni who's practicing this has just finished his huta-huta asana. This means offering of oblations into the fire. This is, of course, the process that he is taking, one of the processes of self-realization he's engaged in. A Brahmana has many different types of purificatory activities they perform. Prabhupada takes very quick option to make the point about Lord Chaitanya's instructions to us in this day and age. Kalo nasteva, nasteva, nasteva. Harinama, harinama. That the process in these other ages, we've got, we've got Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and Kali Yuga. So Satya Yuga, the process, who knows, the process is what? Come on, you're all learned sages. Huh? Yes, yes, deep meditation. Radha Shyam don't want anything to do with my class. meditation. And then we have Treta Yuga. The process is Jagna, yes. Then we had Dwapara Yuga. The process is deity worship. And Kali Yuga, as mentioned right here, Harinam. So these different processes there. Now, this does not mean that these processes are only performed in that age, but that in those particular ages, because of the requirements and because of the result, those types of activities are performed primarily as the process of self-realization. So even though we're in the Kali Yuga, we can do these different types of things. They will not be quite on the same level as it is when it's the Yuga Dharma, but we have that opportunity available to us. So Prabhupada's very pointed here about when one has to get up, about when one is sleeping, about how long one can sleep. Now, if one wants to sleep longer, then go to bed earlier. I mean, that's the simple thing. They say that your morning sadhana begins the night before. So if you don't take rest till 10, 11, 12 o'clock, then it's not much likelihood you're getting up at 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, this is being very clearly pointed out here. Apparently, Prabhupada had some experience or had observed those in the Brahmacharya ashram sleeping till 7 or 9. Interesting, he says 7 or 9. And we would generally in the West say 7 or 8, 6 or 7, you know, right next to each other. But we find in the Shastras that there's a skip. They do the odd numbers, 7 or 9. So you can't sleep till 7 or 9 o'clock. It's just not acceptable. Rise early in the morning. Now, Prabhupada mentions something here. He indirectly states it. He says, the brahmachari must rise early in the morning and after placing himself should chant the holy name of the Lord. So what does this mean, after placing himself? This is an unspoken indication of the requirement for being able to sit and peacefully chant. Rising early has been noted, but taking bath, putting on fresh cloth, putting tilak on the body with the proper mantras. In one place, Prabhupada says, if one puts on the tilak and doesn't chant the mantras, it's no better than cosmetics. So putting the tilak on, chanting the proper mantras. If one has the sika, tying the sika properly, opening it, cleaning it, tying it back up. These are all prerequisites for considering having just gotten up in the morning. One doesn't just get up and then just, you know, or lay in the bed and chant. You know, I mean, circumstances, may whatever, according. But what's being pointed out here is a different situation. So these are all part of this placing himself, becoming qualified, making the necessary activities to be able to concentrate nicely. If we're unclean, if we have dirty cloth, if we have no tilak, all these different things, then the ability to concentrate and get the direct contact with the holy name that we desire and require is greatly restricted. So these are included in this simple statement here, after placing himself. After what? After rising, after bathing, after dressing, after applying tilak, etc., etc., etc. And finding a suitable place. The best place, of course, we see right here is in this great ashram. In our own home, we need to make a place that is suitable for such activities. You know, so all of this is describing the clear focus of someone intent on getting the result of chanting the holy name. getting the result of performing their devotional practice, getting the result of executing sadhana. Excuse me. This is all what's very necessary here. Now, the other note here is that it appeared that the sage had undergone great austerities and that the sign of observing brahmachari, the vow of celibacy, was present there. Generally speaking, we observe someone, we can understand about their lifestyle. We can understand about their activities. We recently had, under Bhadra's direction, this Gasparilla parade in, I think it's Tampa or St. Peter, wherever it is, where the devotees go and take part in this pirate parade, as they call it. And generally, it's much warmer, and the persons that take part in that are, how do we politely say, considerably less covered. That was good. usually, we see that the type of dress for such an event as that is very minimal. And we can understand from that type of appearance, a certain lifestyle goes with that. That's just, you know, the way it is. So we see here that this sage was noted as being not so effulgent externally as far as the appearance, but effulgent by his personality, by the spiritual glow. Now, I noticed one word in the Sanskrit here, jatilam. Jatilam indicates matted locks. Now, I'm sure everyone here knows this, but maybe those listening may not, but jatilam has its word is found in the name Jatila. Jatila, of course, is the mother-in-law of Krishna. Well, technically the mother-in-law, excuse me, the mother-in-law of Abhimanyu. It's said that there are three obstacles to Krishna's uniting with Radharani. One is Abhimanyu, her so-called husband. The word so-called is always put in there. So-called husband. Kutila, his mother's sister, and Jatila. Jatila is the mother. Jatila is mostly blind. She can't see very well, but she has very keen hearing. This is quite often the case where if you lose one sense, the other senses kind of step in. So she can't see very well, but she can hear very well. She's always listening. But the real indication in her name, Jatila, means lock. She has this big pile of jut, as they call it, matted locks on her head. And it's said that these locks are just as matted as her mind and heart is in regards to Krishna. So at any rate, I caught that here because the sage has these matted locks. And these are not matted locks that are never cleaned, never washed. The bathing is regularly done into the river, into the lake, like this. So even though there are these external things that appear not to be, just like when Rupa and Sanatan left their service under the Shah in Ramkeli, they came before Mahaprabhu, and they were in their Muslim lila, we could say, appearing like those they were associating with externally. They had established, you know, Vrindavan practically for all purposes in the home they were living in. But they considered that, no, we're not appropriate here. And even once they had given up that service under Mahaprabhu's instructions to go to Vrindavan and fulfill his wishes for them there to uncover the holy places, to find the lost deities, and to write books. On that way, there were different places where they met with the Lord. And they came, Sanatana Goswami particularly, came to see the Lord. And he was in that external appearance still. He hadn't finished with all this. And Lord Chaitanya said to his servant, I think it was Govinda, he said, please go outside. Sanatana Goswami, he said, bring him in. So Govinda went out, he looked around, he just saw what appeared to be some Muslim mendicant or something, you know, ragged clothes and beard and matted, you know. No. Came back in, he said, no, I didn't see any Sanatana Goswami. He said, did you see anyone? Well, yeah, I saw this one, you know, kind of Muslim-looking mendicant kind of guy. Bring him in. So he was brought in. And once Lord Chaitanya received him, he requested him, okay, now go and clean up. Shave off the beard, cut the hair, etc., like this. And this was, of course, Prabhupada's claim to fame for us as his disciples, you know, especially in the early days of our exclusive preaching mission, when that was all that our mission was. At the time, we were all 20 years old. We weren't 40, 50, 60 with children and grandchildren and communities and like that. So this shaved head and shaved face was important to him, very, very essential. And he would even point out on occasion how it made us very effulgent, as he indicates here. Excuse me. As he indicates here in this purport, the healthy, effulgent look. I know for myself, I was never one of those, as we would use the term, dirty hippies. But, you know, I somehow always managed to have bath. But nonetheless, because of the activities that go with that lifestyle, the effulgence is not necessarily there, you know. So when Prabhupada saved us, as he said, I saved you and shaved you. So when he delivered us in that way, we become effulgent. He would sometimes look at, yo, you look just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Oh, you look like you've come directly from Vaikuntha. Because of that appearance, due to the healthiness of performing these different types of activities. Prabhupada mentions in the purport here the unpolished gem. We see that for someone who's a gemologist or someone who's, you know, mining for diamonds or rubies or whatever, even they find them still in their very rough nature, they can understand, oh, this is really what I'm looking for. Then it is retrieved, and then through the process of cleansing, through the process of purifying, through the process of making it more presentable, the diamond becomes manifest. So in the same way, Prabhupada saw all of us in our unpolished situation, but he could see something is there. And so by the process of cleansing physically and internally, by the process of sadhana, by the process of these different activities, we were able to come to this point of appearing to be more effulgent, appearing to be connected. And why is that? This word right here is very important. Snigdha pangava lokanat. Snigdha. Snigdha means smile. It's described in the Nectar of Devotion. There are different types of smiles. That kind of closed lip smile. That kind of just a little bit parted in the teeth, barely showing. That very big smile where everything is there. So these different types of smiles are there. This snigdha, this affectionate glance, is how the sage was able to stay so effulgent because of his connection with the Lord, both through the Lord's own viewing of him, but more importantly, through him hearing what the Lord was instructing. He was listening to the guidance. He was getting the kind smile. They say this is one of the great things that a parent can do, is encouraging by smiles and by friendliness the children that they're doing well, continue on like this, and that the children then show that reciprocation. I know with my two youngest granddaughters, they're always looking so happy, and my son-in-law and my daughter are always very encouraging to them, and I've heard the way she parents, and you know, so very much encouraging like that, and as a result, that person becomes very satisfied, very happy, because they're receiving that kind of encouragement and nourishment. Prabhupada mentions here the flip side of that. He says a drunkard, a smoker, or a sex monger. He refers to these. When you look at someone, as I mentioned, you can tell by their appearance, their type of lifestyle. Some of the people that I work with, what to speak of some of the people that I deal with in the store, they come in, and I can see by looking at them, by smelling them, oh boy, this isn't going to go very well. You know, they'll come in to me with some complex plumbing problem. Those of you that don't know by now, I work in the plumbing. So some complex plumbing problem, and I'm explaining it to them, and I'm smelling the fact that they reek of alcohol, or that I'm getting a contact high from the amount of pot that they've smoked before they've come in. And I'm thinking to myself, here is a house about to be flooded. So, you know, in that situation, how are these people going to be able to think clearly? And you can see it in their appearance. They don't look clear. They don't appear bright when they speak. Or, you know, so this is not just a judgmental point of view. This is a very practical reality. You know, now Prabhupada goes a step further and says, such persons as this, they can't practice yoga. We see sometimes, what was it I saw somewhere? Beer yoga or something like that. I saw it some time ago that, you know, anyway, all these different concoctions of how to perform yoga. Yoga requires brahmacharya. This is why the process of yoga is not the process of self-realization in this age, because no one can perform it. It's not possible. So at any rate, we see these things are here, and this is very, very necessary to have this type of a more pure lifestyle. Prabhupada also mentions here how the sage was dressed in rags. Now, I don't know much about that myself, but I do have one sweater that I wear for when I do my puja that has a number of holes in it, more holes in my spiritual life, as they might say. I continue to wear it. I've been asked two or three times, why don't you just throw that thing away? No, this is a special sweater, you know. So you can become attached to something even if it's in a ragged condition. But the point is that the sage appeared in this manner, but not only was the personality of Godhead able to see past this, but we see Swayambhuva Manu was, because he's about to hand his daughter over. He's about to arrange for his daughter to be married to this person who apparently has no income, who apparently has no resources, who apparently has no higher education. But, oh, you're most suitable. So he's looking at something, Swayambhuva Manu, he's looking at something beyond just that external appearance. So this is the manner at which one is able to appreciate how the Lord can guide them. And that we see in this pastime that I'm going to share today about Ishwar Puri, because we're celebrating the day for Ishwar Puri. We know, of course, Ishwar Puri is deeply connected to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and we're familiar with that, so I decided not to tell that particular incident, but to go down a little bit of a different path. Ishwar Puri was known to Navadvip prior to his relationship with Nimai Pandit at the time, or Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was traveling to all the different holy places, and he came to reside in Navadvip. And while he was in Navadvip, he stayed primarily at the house of Gopinath Acharya. Now, at that time, Nimai Pandit was in his student lila. He was studying. He was teaching also like that. And so Ishwar Puri came into Navadvip, and he came in disguise, more or less. Now, what type of disguise, it isn't indicated, but he didn't want anyone to know exactly where he was. So he came to know where Advaita Acharya's home was. Now, it's not mentioned whether it was Advaita Acharya's home in Shantipur or Advaita Acharya's home in Navadvip. He had two homes. We had a third one also in Puri, but that's outside the point. So he came to the place where Advaita Acharya was engaged in worshiping his deity there, and he sat down very quietly just in the courtyard. Now, it's described that the effulgence of a Vaishnava cannot be hidden from another Vaishnava. I'm sure you've all had this experience. You go through an airport or some public place, and you see somebody like, that's a devotee. You know, that's a devotee. And you can tell there's a certain Shakti that's there. So in this way, he sat down, and Advaita Acharya began to look at this person that had come that didn't appear to be who really was. And he finally said to him, he said, my dear sir, who are you? I have the feeling you are an advanced Vaishnava sannyasi. And Ishwar Puri, in the just embodiment of humility, which he was, and that was why he received the blessings he did from his own spiritual master, Madhavendra Puri, he replied in a humble voice with his head down. He said, no, I'm just a low-class sudra. I've simply come for the darshan of your lotus feet. Now, Mukunda Dutt was there also at this time. And Mukunda Dutt also, being an advanced devotee, could detect this is not just some, you know, low-class sudra. So Mukunda Dutt began to chant a particular kirtan. Now, Mukunda Dutt was known for his kirtans, was known for his chanting, sweet, sweet voice. And he began to chant. And as he chanted this, Ishwar Puri heard this kirtan, heard the message of Krishna's name in this kirtan, and immediately went into a swoon and fainted on the ground. And so it was understood, this is exactly who we thought. And the devotees present there with Mukunda and Advaita said, we've not seen a Vaishnava like this in some time. So Advaita Acharya went over and embraced him and raised him up off the ground and said now he could understand that this was the dearmost disciple of Madhavendra Puri, Ishwar Puri. And loud, loud shouts of Hari, Hari, Hari all rose up in the air. And, Ishwar Puri became a bit settled there, you know. So it was very, very nice a way for him to enter into that situation. And so during this time, he had not yet met Nimai Pandit. So one day, he was sitting on the path, and he saw Nimai Pandit come by with some of his disciples, some of his fellow students as well. And he was amazed. He looked at Nimai Pandit, and just his bodily appearance and his grave disposition. And, you know, he was so amazed. He called out. He said, excuse me, but what is your name? Where is your house? What book are you studying now? Now, this is very indicative of the proper way. You know, and I always say, so how are you doing today? Everything okay? No, everything's not okay. I'm in this material world. Nothing is okay. But we see here that he doesn't address, how are you? Is everything good? You feeling all right? No. What's your name? Okay, I need to know your name so I can address you properly. Where's your home? Because by the part of the town that you live in, that will indicate what your activity is. Are you living in the mercantile section? Are you living in the Brahminical section like that? And what book are you reading? What are you studying? And this is the way he was able to ascertain the position of an individual. Not by their physical health. Well, you know, I got a cough today. I kind of sprained my leg yesterday. You know, no. But what's your name? Where do you live? What are you studying? These are the proper inquiries. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a little taken aback, and one of his students, it says, spoke up for him, said, you don't know him? This is Nimai Pandit. And Ishwar Puri said, the Nimai Pandit? You're Nimai Pandit? And he was very, very happy. Now, it mentions that Mahaprabhu felt quite humble because he could tell not only is this a senior to me, but this is obviously a very advanced devotee. And he didn't want to accept some kind of praise. So he said, Sripad. He said, please be merciful upon me. Kindly come to my home for prasadam. Let me honor you in this way. And so Ishwar Puri came. Mahaprabhu received him. It mentions he set him down nicely, placed a garland on him, placed sandalwood paste on his forehead, bathed his feet, dried his feet with his own hand. He didn't engage someone else to do. With his own hand, he washed and dried the feet, and then offered him prasadam after the deity had eaten. And then, after Ishwar Puri had eaten, Mahaprabhu accepted that mahaprasadam. So in this way, Mahaprabhu showed very much how one serves a senior Vaishnava, particularly someone that's about to become his spiritual master. So after this meal, the two of them entered into the temple of Vishnu, and they sat and discussed about Krishna for quite some length of time, deep into the night, it mentions. And in their discussions, they both felt prema. They both felt love of God manifesting. So in this way, for 1 month, Ishwarpuri stayed there in Navadvip, and almost on a daily basis, Mahaprabhu invited him for prasadam. Sometimes Ishwarpuri would arrange with Gopinath to have Mahaprabhu come to him and eat with him there. Now, this next pastime between the two of them is very instructive to us. So Ishwarpuri at this point is writing, and he's written, and he says to Srita, the book he's written is Krishna Lilamrita, Sri Krishna Lilamrita. And so he says to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says, you're the topmost of pundits. This I can easily observe, and I know this from others. And I'm writing a book about Krishna's pastimes. I wonder if you would please look at it and give me some pointers. You know, correct any faults that may be there. And if you do this, it'll bring great pleasure to me, because then I'll have a better quality book. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was sitting at the feet of the Lord, Ishwarpuri, and he said, the words of Krishna's devotees are as good as Krishna himself. They are in the same category as he is. They are from his alphabet, not from the material alphabet. Such words are not mundane. One who finds fault with Krishna or with his devotees is a great sinner. What a bhakta writes is not mere poetry. It is completely different. It is dear to Krishna, and so it is perfect. A devotee's prayers of love for Krishna have nothing to do with the rules of grammar and do not depend upon them. Krishna is only interested in the love that is in such prayers. They are dear to Krishna in any case, whether they are properly constructed according to the rules of grammar or not. One who looks for faults in these words of a devotee will never be pleasing to Krishna. So this is a very important point to us, both in regards to how we treat other devotees, in how we speak about other devotees, and in how we appreciate the efforts of other devotees, whether it be in regards to having written some nice books, or whether it be in regards to the service that they've rendered. You know, it's the kind of thing where we have to be very conscientious like that. So at any rate, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke like this. Ishwarpuri was very, very, very satisfied and felt that he had been drenched in nectar by these words of Mahaprabhu. So we know the rest of the story. Mahaprabhu actually accepts a formal initiation from Ishwarpuri. And then we have four instructions that Ishwarpuri gave to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The first one: in the age of Kali, there are no principles of religion save and except the chanting of the holy names. This is the essence and purport of all scriptures. Number two, by chanting the holy name, one gets freedom from material existence, and thus one is able to get the darshan of the Lord. Number three, there are four principles of material life, namely economic development, sense gratification, religiosity, and liberation. But the fifth principle, love of God, in front of love of God, all the other four principles hold the straw of the street in their folded hands. We might think, oh, I'm very anxious to become very successful, or I'm very anxious for sense enjoyment, or I'm practicing great religiosity, or I'm ultimately looking for liberation. But these items take the straw from the street between their hands and bow their head in front of love of God, which is the ultimate goal. And the fourth thing, he continues, my dear boy, continue chanting the holy name of the Lord, dancing in Sankirtan, associating with the devotees, and spreading Krishna Nam, and thus you will develop love for Krishna. So these are four very important principles that we see have been given by Ishwarpuri to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There are so many other pastimes of Ishwarpuri. I mean, we could spend, you know, an entire day talking about the activities he's performed, but we're trying to follow the guidelines given on this little piece of paper taped to our desk here. So we'll finish there with today's comments, both on Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 21, verses 45, 6, and 7, and some minimal pastimes of Ishwarpuri. If anyone has any comments, questions, corrections, chastisement, broomsticks are right out there.
Hare Krishna. Good morning. Thank you for a really enlightening class. It's really easy to follow. I like that you broke down everything that we read line by line. I was just thinking back to my experiences when I was a brahmachari and like people saying, oh, you look so effulgent, you got that glow. But visually, if I look at a picture from me in that peak time, you can see I was very happy and shiny. But here's where my question comes in. Also in my life, in my early 20s and teens, I got in trouble. And when I was a teenager, I went to a boys' camp out in the woods for like a year. And then when I was early 20s, I went to prison for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And there's this phenomenon that they call prison glow, that when you get out, you have this effulgence to you. And people were telling me about it while I was there, that watch. As soon as you get home, everybody's going to be like really attracted to you. Mm. And I think that, it was very true. There was people at my house like, wow, you know, just couldn't wait to see me. Like, you feel like a movie star. And a lot of it, I feel like, comes from regulation, like still with that word, because you're sleeping at a regulated schedule, you're eating at a regulated schedule, and doing some work and exercising and reading and stuff. So my two questions are, like, what's the difference between, you know, being a brahmachari and living at the temple? You're still institutionalized. And that, how much of that just comes from regulated eating and sleeping, like this great sleeping habit we're describing that's so healthy and important, to wake up early and go to bed early. And then also, so that's my first question, like, what's the difference between those two? And also, you could say somebody that goes to PT, basic training for the army, when they get back home from basic training, I feel like, you know, they're in a better shape and better trained and regulated headspace, but it's not yoga, you know. So, but then my second question is, like, why is that so hard to maintain, kind of like once you get back into the real world, you know, and you have like nights where you know you're not on an institutionalized schedule?
Well, the answer to both of those questions would be the same: the spiritual focus. The performance of regulated activities, austerities even, that is a foundational basis of spiritual life. Because spiritual life means to place Krishna first and my own desires second. And then by doing that, Krishna sees that those desires in connection with our service are fulfilled. So when we're in a forced regulated situation, we embrace it because we have no choice. We follow it, and we get the benefit of that regulated lifestyle. And that's part of the concept behind imprisonment, is to give that regulation so that one can become a bit more introspective. What's it they say? Rehabilitation. And that rehabilitation isn't just, okay, I won't kill people anymore, but it's a change of heart. But as Prabhupada mentioned in the conversations in 1975 in Chicago with the police chief of Chicago, at that time, no, what, 75 or 74, At that time, there was a big push for addressing the drug problem in the American youth. And Prabhupada was saying, you're not making any change to the lifestyle, therefore, you're not successful in your efforts. So, and he would point out, whereas they come to our Krishna consciousness and immediately they give all these things up because of the spiritual focus. Same thing with coming out of the military back into a situation, and the same thing with why we're not able to maintain those, because we don't have that spiritual focus outside of a forced regulation. So it has to be a change in the heart. And then, no matter what circumstance we're in, we can adapt to that. You know, but unless we have that, then yes, we fall back into bad habits. And this is why Prabhupada says in this purport, the drunkard, the smoker, the sex monger, they cannot come to this platform because they don't have that purification by choice. They may be in prison, they may be in the military, whatever, and have to do that, but it's not something they've embraced in their heart as a process for purification. Yeah. All right, we'll wrap it up there for today. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to Srimad Bhagavatam, all glories to Ishwara Puri.